Hello and welcome to a new season of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker and on our podcast. I'm Ailey Packham and we are delighted to be surfing the airways once again thanks to the continued support of the magnificent OldFootballShirts.com. So then, new season, a new boss and even new rules as we welcome VAR to the Premier League. Can you sense my excitement? Yay! VAR. So, what's happened since the last time we spoke? Well, most importantly, in what feels like a lifetime ago, we appointed Graham Potter as Chris Hughton's replacement, and he brought his backroom staff of Billy Reid, Bjorn Hamburg and Kyle McCauley with him. In terms of players, to date, it's Thursday we're recording this, the only players that have come in thus far have been Leandro Trossard from Genk and Matt Clark from Portsmouth, although he could possibly now be heading out on loan. Speaking of loans, in a move that can only be described as bizarre, we wave goodbye to Anthony Knockhart, who has gone on loan, yes, loan, to Fulham. Other players we say ta-ta for now to are Christian Walton, who has gone on loan to Blackburn, Victor Gokores, who's gone to St Pauli, Ben White to Leeds, Jan Malarca to QPR, Jason Malumbi to Millwall, Robert Sanchez to Rochdale, and Percy Tell, who, let's face it, we haven't even said hello to yet, has gone to Club Bruges, and Alexis McAllister is keeping Carlos Tevez company at Boca Juniors. We also said goodbye to Liam Rossini and hello again to Andrew Cross. And breathe. Joining me today, for as is tradition, for the first show of the season, we've got the band back together. So, on harpsichord and bass, it's Andy Bass. On theremin, it's Marcus Hancocks. And on kazoo, it's Alan Wares. Hello. Happy new season, everyone.
Hello. You're destroying the furniture already.
I am already.
Okay. It's a beautiful thing. So, yeah, right, before we start talking football, how's your summer been, chaps? Anything happening on the sporting front that's excited you at all?
Not really.
Well, I would say the Women's World Cup.
Sussex won the World Cup.
Going on. Yeah. And cricket, but
The Cricket World Cup was good.
Yeah. And the Women's World Cup?
I watched bits of it, but I wasn't swept away with World Cup fever for that, but it was all right.
I very much enjoyed the Women's World Cup. I thought it was great,
and
I'm still spitting feathers on behalf of Ellen White, but we might talk about VAR later.
If you're going to get back to the Women's World Cup and the link to the Albion, as I do know, and this is brilliant stuff, is that the Albion can report a fivefold increase in the number of season ticket holders for the Women's Albion Women's team this season, so which is brilliant news. So.
Oh, good,
excellent.
Which is great. And hopefully they'll kick on and have a few more games at the Amex as well, where people might actually want
be
to go
really
to,
nice,
other than the arse end of Crawley.
Exactly.
Which is Crawley. Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. So it's been a relatively quiet post-season for the Albion. Obviously, the new manager who we'll talk about in a minute, and obviously, but only the two new players come in thus far. Like I said, we are recording this on Thursday night.
The two potential first team players? We have signed others, but they're going into the sort of like the kids' squads. But if you're talking about potential first team players, then I get your point. But this is the thing, isn't it? I mean, we've appointed Graham Potter. We haven't actually talked about this on the Raw, because the last time we had a show, we were kind of still a little bit numb from, not necessarily Hughton sacking, but the sort of like the sheer speed of it. You know, 7 o'clock on the Monday morning after we'd just finished the season. And clearly the club had someone lined up, and we'd been talking about, there was talk of Potter at Swansea. But, you know, so, I mean, it's been a while, but it's not so much talking about his appointment, but since he's come, any thoughts, gentlemen?
But let's just rewind quickly. I mean, just quickly, Marcus, I mean, I know you were not particularly vocal in your support for Chris Hughton towards the end, but I mean, the method of departure was probably, do you think it could have been left back for at least another couple of days or been handled differently?
It definitely could have been handled differently. I was saying to Alan, actually, when we was at that Brighton Legends game only the other week, that it surprised me. It didn't surprise me that we pulled the plug on him. I would have got rid of him weeks before, but you know, that's me. That's how I am. I could see it wasn't working. However, I can understand why they made the decision, absolutely. And as I was saying to Alan, it did surprise me, though, for a man of sort of Chris Hughton's dignity, I guess. I'm surprised they didn't shake hands on a deal and mutual consent.
Yeah.
You know, that what surprised
me. It's the honourable
thing,
isn't it? Yeah.
I really genuinely thought that, you know, I got a message actually from a friend, Tim, who posted literally about 7:30 in the morning the odds on Graham Potter being the manager, and at that point Chris was still in the job because of course it was there. And then, you know, I forwarded it to a few friends and they're like, blimey, that was quick, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then it came out that he's been sacked, and I was like, wow, that surprised me. I would have thought it would have been mutual consent. Quite clearly, whatever happened behind closed doors.
What happens is that after the weekend they have their meeting, that, you know, sort of the board, someone from the board, usually the chairman and the management team, they have their meeting, whatever it is they need to discuss. Mm. But at 7 o'clock you get hoyed in to say, sling your hook out the door.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure somewhere down the line he thanked him for his services, but who knows? Mm. But yeah, it was kind of right, you know, you scared the living daylights out of me.
Yeah, because if I was Tony Bloom, the way I would have, I mean, it's Tony Bloom's club at the end of the day and he pulls the strings, but I certainly, if it was me who was Tony Bloom, I'd have been sitting Chris down and saying, right, OK, here's a cheque for the remainder of your contract.
Oh, you'll have his contract hands. Paid up anyway.
Yeah, exactly,
but, yeah.
We're going to shake hands, but, you know, that's it. But, you know, to save face on both parties, mutual consent would probably be the way forward and a shake hand. But
so, basically what we're saying is it was probably the right decision.
Oh, but, absolutely, but 100%. Anybody who says otherwise needs their bumps felt. It was completely the right decision, sadly.
Andy, anything to add to that?
No, not really.
Okay, oh, so
you don't
want to
hear me repeating what I just
said. So Graham Potter did come in, and it was done relatively quickly. So it's a new boss, new methods, and new formations, and it's a risk.
Any new manager's a risk. But any new manager, even I was about to say, especially Mourinho, but of course Mourinho.
But
a risk.
Obviously, with Dan Ashworth now at the club, it shouldn't be necessarily a surprise that he's gone for a young, talented English manager. But I mean, there's now two managers in the Premier League that have been promoted from the Championship this year that weren't promoted from the Championship, if you know what I mean. In the shape of Potter and, of course, Frank Lampard.
Appointed
from the Championship.
But okay, let's go back to the question before you sort of, you know, cut across it. We're not necessarily going to talk about the appointment because it's done. But seeing what we've seen since with the pre-season, I was just wondering if, and all we're hearing about what Swansea did last season and Östersund's in the seasons before that, is there anything about sort of Graham Potter that you think is worthy of comment right now from what we've seen in the pre-season games?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's, for once, the pre-season games have actually been worth watching.
that wasn't a funny comment from Andy that made Marcus howl there. It's the fact that AD nearly battered the microphone into Andy's nose.
That's true, but Andy's right, because I think it was We Are Brighton or something. Mm. When we played Birmingham in the pre-season friendly last year, I think the first shot on target was something like the 65th minute.
I watched... because the club had started streaming these games. I thought, well, okay, I'll watch the Liefering game on the stream and see how long it holds my interest. Yeah. You know, thinking, you know, the odds were, you know, sort of
friends from the ESK were being delightful over there.
5 to 10 minutes was about all I thought was gonna hold my interest.
Just gotta say, Anthony and Ali, we salute you for your support in Liefering. It was wonderful.
But I just, you know, but it was really good from the get go. We were playing, at pace. We were, you know, it clearly looked like a bunch of players that were out to impress the new manager, a manager whose reputation has gone before him in the fact that he likes to have a good look at everybody, give everybody a chance. I think players seem to think, right, especially those who weren't really in the frame last season. Definitely thought, okay, we're going to get into this and really take this seriously. It would seem to be taken a lot more seriously by the players than you would have thought for basically a first run out against a second division regional Austrian side, and you noticed that immediately. And I thought, well, hang on a minute, this is actually pretty interesting. You know, a couple of bits of comedy defending, which gave away a couple of goals, but. But going forward, you know, you just saw people, you know, moving around, you know, making themselves available for the ball. Some really nice crossfield passing. I think we're going to see a lot of that this season. Some nice 50, 60-yard crossfield balls to spread the play. And the link-up play between two forward players, which is like something we did not see at all last season, really.
They also look like they were enjoying themselves. Mm. They seem to be... I know it's pre-season, you can't necessarily tell, and everything's sort of different as the season goes on, but there seem to be a little bit more of a spring in their step.
Absolutely. I think, you know, last season, we fulfilled our contractual obligation to like finish four off the bottom.
Yep.
But you know,
it's another 100 million.
Yeah. But it was grim to watch. You know, and
that was awful.
You know, people who listen to this show know that we are normally the glass is always half full and glass is always tinted blue. But even we could.
We were
like face palming.
Yeah. We couldn't polish the ball.
But when you actually laugh at a 5-0 performance, a 5-0 defeat, you have to laugh at it. Mm. That's how bad things are.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it got to sort of like 2-0 and you're really annoyed, 3-0. But when the fourth goes in, you can't help
and
but
each,
laugh.
And each one's exactly the same as the last one.
I think there's been a lot of optimism from each of the games. The games have been different. The only one I didn't see was the Fulham game. But... Yeah, the Leafring game was really entertaining. The Crawley game, less so, but then that was literally just like a sort of hodgepodge of
B-side, yeah.
But there were some interesting little nuggets in that game as well. You got a really nice look at Tudor Baluta, who had a really good under-21 European Championships for Romania. He looks absolutely mustard for me. And then, obviously, the new kid...
Taylor Richards
from Manchester City comes on, does a Panenka. And, you know, the kid's only 18, whether he's going to be near the first team squad or not. He has swaggered in saying, I want to be in the first team.
But that's what you want all of the people that are coming into the development squad to be. That you want them to have that
But it's a case of whether it's been stifled, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it has been stifled.
When you're talking about the kids who have had so little opportunity to come through under Chris Hughton, whether that's right or wrong, I mean, like I said, we've always said it, there's an almighty gap between the first team Premier League and the under-23s. And the wall between the two was only ever going to get higher. When you're in the Championship, obviously the wall's a little bit lower for you to get over to get into that side. If you're in the League One, you know, you might as well put the under-23 side out. But when you're in the Premier League, it's difficult. But the point is that Potter is having a look at them now. But that doesn't mean to say that actually that wall isn't going to go back up again. Once he's made his mind up as to who's good enough at the moment.
I expect the wall to go up, and I expect it to still be high. Certainly higher than it was for the Swansea players, simply because those players are in competition with more senior players.
And at Swansea, he had to do that.
Whereas at the Albion, you know, you've got players who are out in the cold a little bit really the star of pre-season has been Jurgen Lacardia. For me, absolute revelation. For me,
Marcus just turned blue, though.
He's just played himself. he's played himself into the side, almost like he can see that there's a point.
A comment, please, Marcus. Or do you have no comment?
My comment would be, don't get me started on Ali Jahanbash.
Yes.
Hang on. Hang on.
That's all I'm going to say.
Hang on, you started on Lacardia earlier.
I don't have too much of a problem with Lacardia. My problem is, don't even get me talking his name.
But Marcus, I mean, if the problem was, and we've been hearing it through various dispatches, that the fact was in the training methods under Chris Hughton, they were only ever working on defensive shape, and there was no forward plan. It's just basically just give it to those players and see what they can
do. Lump it up to Glenn and see who could do
now,
something.
Now, under Potter, it looks like there is actually going to be a plan for the forward players. We're seeing Jurgen Klinsmann play with a smile on his face. You're seeing Jahanbash with actually an idea of what he's actually meant to be doing, and possibly with less defensive duties than he's ever actually had before. I'm not saying he's going to be like sort of gold dust this season, but I think we're going to see a lot better. And I think even you, we'll talk to you about this at Christmas.
We will. I mean, you know, there's a few pints going to be flying around at the end of the season. Let's put it this way. Yeah. I don't necessarily have a problem with Lacardia. I do think there's a job that he can do. I still don't know what it is because he doesn't even know what his best position is, because every interview is like, I don't know whether I'm a winger or I'm a centre forward. I play behind the striker. It's like, okay, mate, you might as well say you want to play in goal. No, I get that, but Lacardia probably can do a job. I mean, he has, even last season, he did the simple stuff very well. He kept the ball moving, he passed it to the same colour shirt. There wasn't a lot that he did wrong, although he was lazy, so I hope he applies himself. But Alidja Handbash, he can't control the ball, he can't beat a player. I haven't seen him do one decent cross. In fact, I haven't seen him do anything. So as far as I'm concerned, he really needs to step up, because as far as I'm concerned, he is a waste of
money. You meant clean slate, though?
A clean slate with a manager. I will give him 45 minutes against Watford, and if he doesn't do anything, then he's out.
45 minutes. Yeah. Everyone else has got three starts. Or four games to prove themselves. Yeah. He's got 45 minutes.
Because at the moment, the way it stands is he's got the same amount of assists and goals that I have for Brighton Hove Albion, and I haven't played Premier League football, and he has. And that's all I'm going to say.
Well, he had two against Leafery. So he's now ahead.
But he hasn't still played Premier League football.
And he did score in a...
You don't count pre-season, because then you're getting into Pelé's 1,000 goals or whatever it is. Scored against under 10 side.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, he's on about 270 goals now.
Yeah, but that's not going to, for, the record scorer, is it? Anyway, first team games. Against credible opposition.
I am so looking forward to putting this particular rant out on loop at Christmas.
You can put it out on loop at Christmas, and if he tears up the division, I'll be happy.
If we are going to put it out...
He can drive you to the airport. Yeah.
If we're going to put it out on a loop, can we actually do it behind one of his own songs?
Absolutely, yeah. That's even funnier.
That's
Jurgen Cardia.
Yeah,
exactly.
Sorry. Yeah. But if we're talking about forward players, it's interesting that the phrase that you used at the top of the show there, mate, a bizarre decision to get rid of Anthony Knockhart.
Yeah.
I don't think it was bizarre.
I'm not saying it's a bizarre decision. I'm just saying the transfer's bizarre. The fact that it's on a loan. If you're going to sell him, sell him. Don't loan him out.
But the point is, and we're back to Marcus's point, is if it works out well at Fulham and they get promoted, we can grab him back. And let's face it, and it actually ties in with Marcus's point, if Ali J is no good, we've got Nocky back.
Yeah.
So, he's gone out for a season-long loan. We haven't lost him permanently. I think actually on that level it makes a lot more sense still. I'm not as big a fan of Knockhart as I am of the others.
Including Jahanbash, blimey.
I don't see Jahanbash lunging into players. That's when you're up against.
No, he never made a tackle. I mean, it's great. It was the cleanest shirt you will ever see coming off that pitch. It was brilliant. It was like, you really have put a shift in, didn't you, mate?
There's a lot of misty-eyed stuff about the fact that, and let's face it, paying tribute to Knockhart, we were the best side in the Championship for 2 years running, and a lot of that was down to Anthony Knockhart. I don't think we'd have got promoted without him. He was our he was our Mushtaq Ahmed. We were a very good side, but he took us over the line. He provided that bit of magic. Yeah. That's what he was. That's what he does in the Championship. And we know he's done it for Leicester. He's done it for us, and he'll almost certainly do it for Fulham. He'll tear up the division.
He has actually done it for this. To be fair, inconsistently, he has done it for us in 76 games. Well,
that he's had the opportunity of being selected, or maybe not injuries, maybe not suspensions. I would say it's in single figures that he's actually shone. And it wasn't until, for instance, the Manchester United game at the end of last season that he had his first decent game. The first 35 games, nothing. I know he had his issues, fine. This season has hardly torn up the division. Don't get me wrong, might be down to the Houghton tactics. But there are other things at play here, so...
Andy?
The sad thing is that Knockhart wasn't the player that he was in the Championship. And again, there are extenuating circumstances for that. But I just felt that... We have got quite a lot of wide players. It seems to be an area that we are looking to buy in. I think Trossard has been brought in as just like a younger, hungrier version of and hopefully more productive version of him. But you just can't knock what Knockhart has done for this club.
Of course not.
He's been an absolute he has been an absolute legend. There's a lot of legends going around at the moment, but we have achieved a lot in recent years, and he's certainly one of the people who deserves an awful amount of credit for that.
Absolutely. But right here, right now, going forward, I'm not convinced, and evidently nor is Graham Potter convinced, he is the man to sort of help us.
There's
take
no
us forward.
Place for sentiment when you're trying to Absolutely. Finish for when you're trying to scrap.
So when you're looking at those who are left behind, let's look at someone who I believe, and I think we said this last year, someone who I believe really is about time he stepped up. And if he does step up to his potential, he could be absolutely awesome, is Solly March. On his day, he is brilliant. But his day isn't often enough. And when I've said this exactly the same thing about Knockhart, but I think that Solly March is a Premier League player where Knockhart not necessarily is.
Well, what we've seen with the Swansea team last season was that there's players that are on the fringes or in the youth team side that weren't anywhere near the first team, but what Graham Potter is a coach, and he coaches these players, and he's made these players better. Now, with someone like Solly March,
he is an arm around the shoulder fella rather than a kick up the backside fella,
yeah,
isn't he?
So, I mean, with the right coaching, he could become. On his day, he's unplayable, basically.
Yeah.
He's been playing him as a wing back, which I've been suggesting for a while, and he's been playing it through a back, which I've been suggesting for a while as well, with the format, with the personnel that we've got. So, how do you see him as a wing back? Do you think that would work for him?
I'd like to see it first.
Yeah, I think it'll give it a go against Valencia. And see how it happens. And see how it pans out, because he did that against Birmingham. So,
yeah,
okay. Who knows?
I mean, the only other time he's played three at the back previously, Houghton played, it was against Chelsea. And the fact that Chelsea beat us 4-0 that day doesn't actually mask the fact that
it doesn't tell the whole story.
Tell the whole story. I mean, the only one of the three centre backs who didn't look comfortable was Shane Duffy. Mm. The others looked comfortable, but we tried it once, didn't do it again. Okay, 4-0 looks bad. And I always took your point about, yes, we could play that three at the back, but they evidently don't rehearse it enough for them to feel comfortable that four isn't better.
Okay, Andy.
Well, yeah, I think March could be a good wing back. He's very good going forward. I think his defensive qualities are underrated. He does run the whole line. He's a young lad and he's got the engine to do that. And then you look. I mean, I'm not saying he's Trent Alexander-Arnold or anything like that. But he has to be looking at how players like that have pushed on and developed and what sort of contribution they make to their teams. And he could possibly, if he puts himself about, he could be that player, that type of player for us. And like you say, on his good days, he's unplayable and he's absolutely brilliant. Potter's job is to make sure those days are more often than not.
Yeah. Who would you have at the opposite side if we're going to go that route?
Bernardo,
probably at the moment. If we're not going to get in another.
Well, the only other person is Montoya at the moment.
Although
Schiolotto's still around.
Can Montoya play as one of the three centre backs?
He'd be playing as a wing back further up the field, which kind of suits. To be honest, a lot of people like Schiolotto and Montoya. It actually suits them to be in that role because that plays to their strengths rather than playing the traditional sort of fullback.
I mean, with someone like Montoya, with someone I wasn't overly impressed with last year. I mean, there was one beautiful cross he put in. I can't remember who it was for now, but he scored a goal, and it was absolutely a peach of a ball. And
started off pretty well.
Yeah, I think there is more to come from him. But again,
he lost his form. Bruno came back in, and Bruno showed him how to do it. Frankly,
absolutely. But I mean, again, it's all about the coaching. And as I said earlier, at Swansea, he was he brought these players through. And Matty James, he was coached at. From the reserves, took through to the first team, and now he's got this big money move to Man United.
It doesn't follow that everything that Potter is going to turn over is going to turn up magic. So you have to be a little bit circumspect.
Let's find out from a Swansea fan who we know a little bit about. Obviously, a Mr. Norman Thomas. Welcome back to the Raw, Norman. How are you?
Thank you. Yeah, good to speak to you. Yeah, great. Thanks.
So. I've got to ask you the obvious question. How are you feeling about losing your manager to us?
Well, I was resigned for him to leave anyway, to be honest. It was a surprise that it lasted as long as he did, given the state of my club at the minute. The last season is a fire sale of players and God knows what. So it was no surprise that anyone that was going to come in for him, a surprise he lasted that long, to be honest. Because there was a few people come in for him, and he's stayed where he was.
Yeah, because I mean, it was a very strange situation for Swansea, getting relegated from the Premier League. Now, normally you're getting the parachute payments, and clubs try to stabilise
Change of owners. The Yanks come in, and they just take the parachute payment. They got no affinity to the club, so sell all the best players, pocket the parachute payments. They've got 4 years of parachute payments now to make return the investment, and then they'll sell the club then to you know, to the nearest bidder, and then off they'll go into the sunset. And thank you very much. So they've raved and pillaged the club. So it's just one of those things. It was we're on the way down, unfortunately, but it was good while it lasted. We had a few years in the sun.
So with the fact that you were struggling and you did like you said have this fire sale, the fact that Graham Potter got you challenging almost to get into the playoffs at the end of the season was a minor miracle.
That's the thing. In he he's a it was fantastic for us. He was relatively unknown, or you know, if they come from Ostersunds or whatever it was, we thought, you know, when he came, first of all, who the hell's this guy? And but you know, he was a breath of fresh air. He got our playing style back, you know, where we wanted to play football. You know, you don't mind losing sometimes if you have a go. You'd bring in the young players in, which, you know, you proved you got you know, it's four or five youngsters that come through from the youth team. You just sold one to Man United for 15 million.
Daniel James,
Dan James. He just sold another one to Sheffield United
for
20 million. Ollie McBurney. So those are players that weren't even anywhere near the first team when he came in. So he's brought players like that through. There's another two or three in there as well with leftovers, which they'd probably be gone soon anyway. But he's not afraid to blood young players, and he brought our playing style back, which is a breath of fresh air. Unfortunately, way things turned out, it was only a matter of time before Premier League. He's a Premier League manager in the waiting with us, so it was only a matter of time who was going to come in for him. You know, if it wasn't Brighton, it would have been, you know, Newcastle have just got, you know, a manager. It would have been somebody like that. Somebody would have come in for him in the Premier League, and you can't blame him for wanting to play there. And I think Brighton is an excellent fit for him. You know, the club structure, the owners, you know, are Brighton fans, and, you know, they aren't going to do what's happened to Swansea and get rid of everybody just to line their pockets. So it's a long-term thing. So I think the Brighton fans are in for a treat. You know, he's got Billy Reid alongside him, who's a bit of a nasty and nice sort of thing. He's the hatchet man. So he's going to, like I say, I think relatively, it's a gamble. Don't get me wrong. It's easy for Brighton to go for a big name to replace Chris Houghton. But I think it's money well spent, to be honest with you. Graham Potter is going to be, I think he's going to be fantastic for Brighton, to be honest.
Well, you mentioned playing style there. So what can we expect from a Graham Potter team?
Well, he's a possession-based, which is what Swansea were. I've been renowned for before the year of doom, before we got relegated. So he brought that back in. Wingers, possession based, playing from the back, wingers. You know, it was certainly something that we hadn't seen back in Swansea. Like I say, you don't mind losing sometimes. If you have a go and you're losing games, well, at least you get entertained, which is, you know, the year that we got relegated, it was like, I mean, similar to what Brighton had last season, I think, under Chris Houghton. You go there and you come away from there thinking, well, you know, that was like sitting in the dentist chair for 90 minutes. You know,
depends where the dentist chair is. Ask Paul Gascoigne.
Yeah. But no, I think it's, you know, from the outside looking in, it was depressing watching Brighton struggle last season, you know, with the style of play and everything else. It just didn't fit. But, the, you know, to bring the entertainment and the philosophy back, same as what he did at Swansea, you know, I don't think you're going to go far wrong. I mean, it's always a gamble. You know, Premier League is a lot different to the Championship and a lot different to what he was used to at Ostersund. So it is a gamble, but I think it's one that'll pay off, to be honest.
Now, as far as formations are concerned, he's very flexible and he's not scared to change it during the game,
no,
which is going to be a novelty for us to see. Particularly, like, as you mentioned, last season wasn't an awful lot of fun towards the end there. So, I mean, do you know, has he got a preferred formation? He had four in one game.
He'd usually play five at the back with us. And then that would morph into, you know, if we went 1-0 down or not playing very well, he'd change it before half time some games. So, you know, he won't stick to a rigid playing formation. You know, but it depends what the players we had. It suited our formation. You know, that we had three good centre backs. and the fullbacks would bomb on a bit, and you'd use them as extra wingers. So it worked, and he's not afraid to change it. If it doesn't work, and then he'll just go back to plan B. So you might see it a little bit differently there as well.
So should we be excited?
I think so. I think you'd be a lot more entertained with Graham Potter and his team than you were last season. Is definitely it's always a gamble. Like I say, it's I don't know. It's one of those things where you'll see the proof of the pudding is going to be in eating, like you'll know after 10 games. But I am sad to see Graham Potter go. But if he was going to go anywhere, for me, it would. Fantastic. So,
well, okay. Well, let's talk about it, because obviously with Graham Potter, he's going to be entertaining hopefully with his new style of football at the stadium that Norman built. You must look back on that with some great fondness, Norman.
Yeah. I mean, I can't believe it's been 9 years since I left there. No, it's sort of time goes so quick, and I don't miss getting up at 3 a.m. in the morning to travel across the M4 and M25, but. Apart from that, it's I got really fond memories of everybody there and the place and the fans and fantastic. And I look back at the photographs. I've got some on my laptop. it seems like yesterday.
We've never been excited about a dog's head since. Trust me.
Dog's head. Chasing the arch up the A20.
Well, it's great. But it's been absolutely lovely to hear from you again, Norman. Don't be a stranger. Yeah. Next time you're down here, hopefully you'll come and visit us again soon. And
no problem. I'll be doing up well anyway.
Many thanks, Norman. Good luck for next season. Okay, that was Norman Thomas, formerly known as Natterjack, from this parish, and he was a wonderful guy to have around, and he showed us around the stadium when it was a building site. And
we won't repeat what they said, what the electricians left the note for the plumbers, but it was great, and that was when we got to hear. We know it now as a 30,000 stadium, but in those days, even when it was being built, it was kind of a little bit of an open secret, but a secret nonetheless, is that we were going to get a 22,300 stadium. Yeah. We saw the plans for it, and you think, wow, the idea that that Bloom has put in and that everyone's sort of built into it is absolutely incredible, and it was so good. And you can hear him talking about how much he's going to miss Graham Potter. It'd be nice to think that what he has seen at Swansea, the likes of it, the quality we'll see at the Albion will really come to the fore, but it is... It's such a still an unknown. The other thing I'd say about that whole scenario is, and you were talking about sort of like what had happened during the summer, was that we haven't had, as you pointed out earlier, we haven't had a massive transfer window, which kind of implies to me that the club saw that the issue was not with the recruitment or even necessarily with the players. It was down to the management and the management alone. Now, I don't know about you, Marcus, or you, Andy, what your thoughts on that are. It's just that... Because the only people that have changed around is the management side rather than the playing side or the recruitment side. If that is your sole sort of point of blame for how poor the season was.
Oh, that's a good question. Yes.
Notwithstanding that the record signing is someone who you just slagged off 10 minutes ago.
Well, no, that's Trossard now, isn't it? and he looks amazing, and he looks like he might put a shift in. So
okay, fine, fair enough. Yeah.
No, but all joking aside, it quite clearly got to a point where Tony Bloom, doesn't make decisions rashly. He must have sought counsel from a lot of people, mm-hmm. and he must have asked even independently, and he must have said, look, this group of players, could you as a manager get better out of them than, the current incumbent? And they must have turned around and said, yes, we could. So
It was a difficult one last season. It was very much a situational kind of thing because the brief is to stay up.
He did it by the
thinnest of margins, but he had a plan of how to do it, and he stuck with that plan through thick and thin, and eventually it, you know, it limped us over the line, but we did get there.
Thank you, Crystal Palace.
But yeah. but we beat them twice. So
absolutely,
you know,
thank you, Crystal Palace.
But there was,
thank you us.
But there was
thank you, Anthony Knockhart.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But there was some expensively assembled talent there, which wasn't properly utilised, and that's where the coaching comes.
But again, yeah, I mean, we're not saying about the situation. We were in a dogfight for pretty much, you know, for a long period of that season. These high profile, these, you know, high cost players that came in injured, had to go off to play in tournaments, came from leagues with which you need a period of adjustment.
So they weren't box fresh, basically.
So no, they were not oven ready, and then it just becomes difficult to integrate them when you've got a core of players that can just do what you want them to do, and Chris, you know, and
square pegs and round holes. Though, yeah.
Then again, we were sitting pretty around December when we beat Everton, and I know we scraped a couple of 1-0 wins, like against West Ham and Wolves
and Newcastle.
Where we had those sort of three sort of back to back 9 points, but in December we were looking up. You know, and it's since the turn of the year, it's that Fulham game. It's that Fulham game.
West Ham, yes, but
it was, you're right. But then again, you know, West Ham had who's a fellow, Arnautović or whatever his name was, who scored.
Yeah,
Arnautović. Yeah. But, you know, the Fulham game, you know, we were 2-0 up and cruising in that one. I know we were against West Ham, and Chris Hughton did not substitute Dale Stevens. And it's an old story. And so the Fulham midfield just overran us. Chris Hughton didn't do it because he never makes subs until the 75th minute, which probably did it for him. He should have brought Stevens off. He should have brought Kyle on. Shore up in the midfield. We probably would have seen that game out 2-1. He didn't. Mitrovic bullied Duffy and Dunk, which is the first time ever. But yeah, we were 2-0 up and cruising. Dale Stevens couldn't put a tackle in the midfield. Just overran us.
Because he'd already been booked and he was playing in snow and ice.
Yeah, quite. And you know, and from that point, it was downhill ever since. And it was incredible how, you know, it just chalk and cheese. First and second half of the season.
Something just seemed to snap.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what it was, but we threw away that 2-0 lead at West Ham, threw away the 2-0 lead at Fulham in what was one of the poorest halves of football that we played last season.
And then the bar that game.
Something went wrong behind the scenes. I don't know. Players lost confidence. They forgot what they were doing. You know, communication with whatever. But it just didn't work.
Heads dropped maybe a little bit.
In a couple of games. Well, we don't know, do we? I mean, but losing.
We've still got to the FA Cup semi final.
Losing's not fun, frustration kicks in. I mean, all these players are human beings. They're gonna be. Well,
we're kind of going over old ground here. I mean, we're looking forward. Then that aspect of it, we hope, has been dissipated.
But now you look at players like the Cardia, like Ali Jay, and that. They've got a new manager. The baggage isn't there. They are fit. They're ready to go. They are ready to go now.
There might be a bit of a bounce.
And, yeah, who knows? Mm. They've got a chance to prove themselves again.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and, of course, on our podcast. Once again, for another season, myself and Alan are delighted to be brought to you in association with the brilliant Phil Shelley's oldfootballshirts.com.
Thank you, Phil.
Over 100,000 shirts on there.
And all of them different. Can I just point out here, actually, that it's just been announced, as a shirt goes. There's a football match going on at White Hawks Football Ground on Sunday, the 4th of August. So if you're going to listen to the podcast, there's a good chance you missed it. It's part of the Pride weekend. It's the ex-Premier League All-Stars, Guy Butter's ex-Premier League All-Stars, against the Rainbow Rovers, which includes, it's a mixed men and women's team and people who have represented LGBT and trans football clubs up and down the country. They're playing at White Hawk. But they've got a new shirt, which we can now exclusively reveal on the Albion Roar, will be White Hawks away shirt. And the thing about it is it's great. The front of it and the back of it are separate maps of White Hawk, street maps of White Hawk. The back of it includes actually where the enclosed ground is. So if you get a chance to see this, we've put it up on our Twitter account already. It's absolutely wonderful, and it will be White Hawk's second shirt, their second 11 shirt this season. It's wonderful. I absolutely love it. It's brilliant. It's a map of White Hawk.
It's a good shirt. It is a good shirt. I've seen it. Yeah.
But sorry, so tell us about the 100.
Well, this is one from Phil's site. I've just handed that over to Andy there. So if you could just describe that one for me, Andy.
Okay. Well, basically, we have got
Hull City.
We've got.
Yeah, I can pronounce that.
We've got yellow, red, black, yellow, red, black stripes. It's rather natty. It looks like a Belgian cycling shirt.
It does, doesn't it? Yes.
I was thinking of a kind of early 90s rave t-shirt.
I can actually see a tighter version of that, some sort of like modish.
And it's got an amazing Lion King roundel badge on it, which is rather spectacular. And then a rather sort of odder thing, which is blurred out with a tree on it. Yeah. But
what's the sponsor?
Prulex.
Yeah. Does that give an idea as to the country? Is it French or Belgian? I mean, you said Belgium, so I was just wondering if it is Belgian after all. What do you reckon, kids?
Well, I know. Well,
I think Belgian.
Is this Union Saint-Gaulois?
No, it is not.
Mate.
This is quite a wordy one, so I better get on with it. This is the 2013 to 2014 home shirt of Club Leones Negros de la Universidad de Guadalajara from the Mexican second.
He always does Brilliant. Mexican, doesn't he?
Brilliant.
He always does Mexican.
I picked it, and this is ironic if you
that
know
was my
Phil.
Second guess.
I picked it because it's colourful.
Well, yeah.
How would he know?
Exactly.
it looks like a colourful barcode.
They play at the 55,110 capacity Estadio Jalisco in the city of Guadalajara in central Mexico.
Brilliant.
They were formed in 1970 and they go by several nicknames, the most common of which is Los Leones Negros, but also the Los Melundos, the Lions' Manes, and Los Universitarios, which is the students. As to be expected with a Mexican side, they've had their ups and downs, and they were forced out of existence in 1994 as the Mexican FA needed to reduce the number of teams in the top flight, and the club was bought and closed down by the Federación Mexicana de Fútbol.
Imagine that happening here.
I know, that's incredible.
There'd be riots in Milton Keynes.
and a new franchise was granted for the third division. After relocating to Costa Costa Carlos in 1997, and then again in 2007 to Ciudad Guzman. They returned to Guadalajara in 2009 after being taken over by businessman Jorge Vergara, and he paid 800,000 pesos for the franchise of Cedi Tapiacho. And they changed their name to, Leones Negros de la Universidad de Guadalajara were born. There we go. Thanks.
The Black Lions of Guadalajara University. That's the name of the club.
Yeah. It does say former defender Claudio Suarez played 147 for Guadalajara, 144 times for Guadalajara, but it's probably more famous for playing 177 times for Mexico. And the only other player who's played more times for his country is Ahmed Hassan, who's an Egyptian midfielder. There's not many links between Mexico and the Albion, but the former striker and Premier League winner Leo Ochoa currently plays for Liga MX side Pachuca.
Thanks for that, Phil. First shirt of the season.
It's a nice one. It's all right, I like that.
Kind of mod blazer. Thanks for that.
There we go. Okay, so let's just move on to the transfers that we do know about. And the first one really we need to talk about is the Robbie Williams lookalike, which is Leandro Trossard.
We've talked about him. It's good.
He looks very good.
Yeah.
I liked his highlight reel. He seems to score as often as he assists.
Fair enough. Well, that's not saying much when you're playing for the Albion.
Yeah, but he's kind of like a 14-goal, 14-assist kind of guy, isn't he? In the Belgian league, so that's the caveat. But, he looks like a player that can make a contribution. He's already seemed to have linked up well with the players in the teams in the pre-season games. Particularly Lacardia and Murray. He looks very handy indeed.
Yeah, and I mean, let's not forget. I mean, he's playing for Genk, who just won the Belgian Jupiler League, which is their first division. So beating teams like Bruges and Anderlecht, the traditional big names in Belgium, which is great for Genk. And he's come to us, and he could have been playing in the Champions League for them.
I think someone said that he actually was one of the Europa players of the league, Europa League players of the season last season. I could be wrong about that, but he really shone in that tournament last year. But the interesting point about what you're saying with what Andy was saying about linking up well with Lacazette and Murray is one thing they are doing in the pre-season, and I hope they can do it in the Premier League, is it's just the two of them. Been playing a lot closer to Murray. I mean, the number of times the ball just got lumped up to Murray and it came because he couldn't control a bag of cement and no one was near him for 40 yards.
Yeah.
So if at least he got someone to knock it down to, then if one of those or both of those even, which is kind of kamikaze-like when you're talking about the Albion and the Premier League, but if one of those is going to be available, you know, they're playing a little bit closer and the rest of the team sort of changes accordingly, then it's a possibility that, you know, Trossard will be made to look a lot better.
But I mean, just looking, I mean, his career track here looks very similar to that of Christian Walton, actually. Loan.
I want to be alone.
But I mean, he went out a few times, but his main thing here, he played for Genk 103 times. He captained them last year to the title, scoring 34 goals.
How old is he?
He was born in 94.
So he's 25 this year.
Born 4th December 1994.
Well, he's 24, so he's well, if you bear in mind Solly March is only 25, you know, they're not actually at the peak of their careers yet. So hopefully if there's more to come from them, you know.
But he's got a great set piece delivery. He created the two goals for Shane Duffy at Birmingham last week.
Do you see him as an alternative then to Pascal Gross? Because bearing in mind that Pascal Gross's dead ball delivery is absolutely wonderful, but his movement is very tree-like.
Yeah, possibly.
Marcus?
There probably will be a place for Pascal Gross, but I don't necessarily see him in the starting 11 come the Watford game.
Because?
If they're playing this three at the back.
Yeah.
A good player to have on the bench, and blimey, he puts a shift in and he covers enough blades of grass. But I don't know, last season was funny because he was injured a lot. So, the season before, he was a revelation.
He was injured a lot, but when he did come back into the side, because it was very stop-start from last year, wasn't it?
When he did come
back into the side towards the end of the season...
It was a safe pair of hands, no doubt.
He started to find his form again.
His dead ball delivery was absolutely awesome. It's just no one was ever on the end of him
because they were back in the penalty area. His delivery from open play as well is wonderful.
Yeah.
Andy?
It's another string to our set piece bow. I think he looks like an exciting player. I think again, it might require a short period of adjustment to the hustle and bustle of the Premier League as compared to the first division in Belgium. But the signs are all there that give us cause for optimism. So
absolutely.
I'm excited to see him play.
Okay, well, we said goodbye to Marcus Suttner, who has...
I thought he'd gone already.
He went on loan last season. Obviously, he was only on loan, so he came back for pre-season. So, unfortunately, we don't actually have a Marcus in the team now, Marcus.
Never mind.
So, you can still make it. You can still make it.
I've got the same stats as Ali J for the first team, so, you know.
We're after this. The rumours are we're after this Webster chap from Bristol City, who was actually born in Sussex, so that's good.
Oh, okay.
He was born
jolly good
in the Witterings, I believe.
Okay,
and so you know another.
Or in the sand dunes.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, okay. Very much so.
Thing is,
this isn't necessarily a replacement.
We don't talk about rumours, though, do we? I mean, it's an album I've heard far too many times, and actually, in football terms, it doesn't really mean a great deal. So let's wait till it happens.
Fair enough.
Is it like an albatross around your neck?
Now that's the proper Fleetwood Mac. Yeah, not that West Coast American nonsense. The real Fleetwood Mac is one that has Peter Green in it.
There you go.
No, it isn't.
Yeah. Tangoing in the night is Henry Bass over there.
You're not going to call me a man in the world.
Okay, well, you're still on Kazoo. Right, so I mean, Lewis Dunk is still here. There's been rumours going on about him all summer. Now, I was at the ground this morning. He's a 30-foot Lewis Dunk right in the centre of the shop.
He's grown, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, so those pictures of Dunk and Knockhart pre-season, we thought Knockhart shrunk. It's not. Dunk is now 30 foot tall. Brilliant. Listen, it's going to take an awful lot to prize him away. I mean, yes. Not only, even if Harry Maguire was going to leave Leicester, or the next sort of, you know, defender was going to leave and go elsewhere, you know, it's just paper talk. I mean, it's such an old tedious cliche. There's still an awful lot that has to happen in order for Lewis Dunk to leave.
Yeah.
It's got to be worth his while. It's got to be the right time in his career. It's got to be the right move. Is it going to enhance it? Or is he going to be a bench warmer? It depends on how he is considered across the rest of the football clubs. And just because someone in the Sun says it, or even someone on Match of the Day says it, doesn't mean to say that football clubs themselves, you know, necessarily see that.
Okay. So, well, Matt Clark is one that's come in, and it's looking like he is, at the time of recording this, apparently he's going to Derby for a medical. Yeah. That means that by the time this airs,
he'll be starting against Watford.
Possibly, yeah. So, I mean,
At 23, and as was said earlier in the show, at 23 and only experience of playing in League One, it's an almighty leap up. So, I think this makes sense.
Yeah.
Would it be a half season loan or a season loan? Or
well, I'm not entirely sure. It will all come out, and we'll talk about that next week. Okay, but one thing we do have to talk about, as is tradition on this show,
we've
got our pre-season predictions from everyone. We've put this up on all of our social media sites, and we've had some great responses for those coming. Keep them coming in.
Absolutely.
We love to see them. But we're just going to get the ones from the guys in the studio for now, and we'll talk about your ones probably next week. So we'll start with number one here, which is, who do you think will be Albion's leading goal scorer at the end of the season? Andy Bass.
Glenn Murray.
Obviously,
yeah.
Do you need to ask? But just for the purposes of those that only tune in every now and then, of course it's going to be Glenn Murray.
Yes, it is.
Of course it's going to be Glenn Murray.
I would love it to be that actually Glenn Murray actually beats Tommy Cook's all-time scoring record and isn't the leading scorer. Then you've got a double whammy of satisfaction.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the moment, the way things stand at the beginning of the season, you can't look beyond Glenn Murray, and that is a bit of a tragedy. And this is where we're hoping that Lacardi, who's looking good in pre-season, can step up. Adrian, what's your prediction?
I've got written down here Lacardi / new signing.
We always say about new signing is a cop out. We can't say that right.
Lacardi,
now.
Though.
All right, okay.
Lacardi.
It'd be nice to think so, and into double figures.
Because I think that the old father time is going to catch up with Glenn this year, and I think that he will play, he will score, but I don't think he's going to play as much as he has.
But the thing is, even the last two seasons, he's not been good for 90 minutes over the whole season anyway. Mm. And when you get to December, he got seven games in a month. Right, no
Alan?
Chance.
And you're saying, Al?
Oh, Murray.
Murray, yeah. Okay. So three Murrays and one proper in the room. Okay. Noted. Okay, player of the season, Marcus.
Well, funnily enough, Alan just touched on it. Of course, obviously, it's going to be Glenn because he's going to be the all-time club record scorer. So, and our only Premier League proven striker is still at the moment. So who else but Glenn, on the back of beating the record, all-time club top scorer, overall legend.
And Marley Latty can actually be the all-time... top division scorer. I think that's Michael Robinson on 37, and Glenn's got about 26, something like that.
There you go. You see, so he's going to get those 11 goals.
So player of the season, Alan Wares.
I think it's going to be, and it's frankly about time. I think it'll be Lewis Dunk
and Andy Bass.
My notes here. It's going to be Glenn Murray. If Glenn Murray ends up being our top scorer,
is there an echo in here?
Yeah. If Glenn Murray. He's going to end up being our top scorer at the age of 478.
He's Methuselah.
Then, quite frankly, he is going to be not only deserving it for his work on the pitch this season, but also, I think, even a slight sentimental thanks.
Tony Bloom's grandchildren looking to move the club to a new stadium. Glenn Murray looking for his 500th league goal.
Thanks for all you've done. But, I just think if Murray ends up being our top scorer again...
It doesn't matter who scores.
Well, this is player of the season now.
Yeah,
I'd say.
But at his age, it is incredible what he's doing. And to be honest, he looks leaner and meaner than he has done in a while.
All right.
One of his famous quotes was the fact that it doesn't matter what division you're in, the goalposts still don't move or something. Yeah. That's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, well, unfortunately, neither does Glenn.
Yeah, but if you lay it on a plate, you don't need to.
Exactly. This is the whole point.
So we've got two Murrays, one dunk. I've gone completely left field on this one. And I've gone for Davy Prepper.
Oh.
Because I think that...
You think he can shine under...
I think that with under Potterball, I think he is going to be an absolute
revelation.
Depends
on how much further forward he's going to be playing. If he does play further forward, hopefully I think that's going to help him.
But if he is, and if he can be that the player that that plays for Holland and is that front-to-back player...
Because we don't know that right now.
I think he could be a revelation. We've seen it in glimpses, and if he could be consistent and do that for a whole season, he will be a shoo-in for that award. So here we've got how many points will we get against the top six sides?
Now, bearing in mind, I think we've got 7 in our first season and 5 last
year.
Is this the
traditional top six?
Yes, is there another top six like Crystal Palace you're throwing in, or maybe Sheffield United? Top six have you got in mind?
Well, I mean, I very much suspect that someone like Leicester will finish above Man United this year.
Traditionally.
You know what I mean. I'll say traditional as in the last
five
seasons.
I've gone for 3.
That's a bit mean.
Ooh. Oh, that's a bit mean.
Yeah. I'm going to go for...
But it might be 3 draws, though, so, you know.
I'm going to go for the same as the first season. I'm going to go for 7.
I've gone for 5.
Marcus?
I've gone for 8.
Wow.
2 wins, 2 draws.
Like it.
Hang on, have you been drinking liquid optimism here?
No, I think that we've beaten Arsenal and we've beaten Man United. I don't know, but I'm just saying, I fancy us to get a couple of home wins and a couple of draws away.
Well, if I like it. If Solskjaer carries on the way he's going, which is doable. When are we playing Man United?
Yeah.
Is it early season?
Yeah. It doesn't matter how they come.
Don't worry about looking up now.
I genuinely believe we will. I mean, as Andy has sort of touched on earlier, certainly through WhatsApp messages and stuff, you know, we are going to get a couple of shoo-ins and we might, you know, possibly get skanked by Watford 4-0 at home. But, you know, I reckon we'll probably beat Chelsea 1-0 just on the basis of, you know, we're not doing a Chris Hughton right. As long as it's, you know, as long as you don't cross a halfway line, we'll all be okay.
And if you look at the way that Swansea played against Man City in the FA Cup last season,
I don't think it's beyond, you know, to get 8. I mean, we'll see at the end of the season. But 2 wins and 2 draws, I don't think is...
It's achievable.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
How many under-23 players will step up to the first team?
Now, bearing in mind we've got a new manager who's given more chances.
I'm going to say 2. I don't think they'll play a lot of games, but they might only just like play one.
And this is league games, by the way, not cup games.
I think maybe injuries might lead to a couple.
Okay.
Getting an odd.
I agree with Andrew.
I'm going for a big fat 0 because I think those that are actually good enough have now already been loaned out. So,
I don't know. I mean, Allsgate's been there about. Connolly's still around. You've got Max Sanders, who's been very highly thought of.
Yeah, but those who are knocking on the door are actually, like I say, on loan. So,
yeah, like Gokoris and et cetera.
Yeah. So, what do you reckon?
I've gone for 2.
Okay, so 2, 2, 2, and 0.
Okay, so we're back to you, Andy, with your wild card.
Okay, I was struggling with this, but bathing in the glow of pre-season optimism, I'm going to go back to one which I think I've used before about the number of goals that we've scored.
Go on. Was it 35 last year, wasn't it?
It was less than a goal a game.
That's rubbish.
So we scored about 35 goals last season.
So what are you going for?
I'm going for in excess of 50 goals.
Wow. Whoa. Oh, wow. Yeah,
you realise we're going to concede 90.
yeah, that may well be the case. But in the process, we will score over 50 goals.
Okay, that's interesting.
Okay.
Go on then.
Marcus Hancock.
Okay, I'm going to read from this, actually. So I'm going to say the random one is Ali J may just show why we paid all that money for him. But I'm not holding my breath.
Oh, please hold your breath.
That is a wild card.
That's not wild, that's mental.
Great. Okay. Was that all of that stuff you were saying earlier? It was just a ruse.
No, it was a ruse. I still remain unconvinced, but that's my wild card.
Okay. All right, Alan Wears.
I think we're going to repeat our double over Palace.
Okay.
Ooh.
Like it.
Okay.
It's all we had to hang on to last year.
It was. Yeah.
Never mind the cup run. Because let's face it, no one's predicting a cup run. No one wants a cup run.
This is my, finally, my wild card is Glenn will score to equal the all-time score record, only to have it wrongly disallowed by VAR and not score again for the rest of the season.
Ooh. Ooh. Well, that's horrible, AD.
That is horrible.
I don't know.
It's not nice.
I don't like it, but I think he's nailed it.
Can I just point out, actually, that we were hoping to get through this entire show without mentioning VAR, because we know full well that once it starts kicking in, we're going to have a grizzle about it each and every week. Yeah. We were so hoping to have a VAR-free show. Thanks, AD, but, you know, so be it.
Right. And funnily enough, that's all we've got time for. So thank, so thank you to... to Andy Bass, to Marcus Hancock, to Alan Wares. Thank you to Norman Thomas, of course, as well. I've been AD Packham. This has been the Albion Raw. See you then. Bye.
Help about the shape I'm in. I can't sing, I ain't pretty, and my legs are thin. But don't ask me what I think of you. I might not give the answers that you want me to. Now when I talked to God, I knew he'd understand. He said, stick by me and I'll be your guiding hand. But don't ask me what I think of you. I might not give the answer that you want me to.